This week's episode of Zero Block 30 is brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. By now, everybody knows what Dollar Shave Club it is. Like, you know, if you're going to shave your asshole, your butthole, your dick, your tits, whatever you're going to shave, you're going to use DollarShaveClub.com if you're smart. At the store, there's too many options. I can't pick anything, dude. Like, if I'm at the store trying to get a razor, I can't pick because there's like 50,000 of them. You don't have to do that anymore with DollarShaveClub.com, and you don't have to spend as much money because those things are fucking expensive as hell. If you're like me and sick of the nonsense at the store, now's the time to try DollarShaveClub.com for a limited time. It's the Shit Shower and Shave Starter Kit for new members. $5. You get the starter kit that features the executive razors, 3 trial size version of the most popular product. If you're first box, you'll receive the shave butter, body wash, 1 wipe Charlie's for your butt, and you'll also receive the executive razor, which includes the premium weighty handle for a full cassette of cartridges. After that, the first box of replacement cartridges are sent to your house for just a few bucks a month. This offer is exclusively available at DollarShaveClub.com/chaps. That's DollarShaveClub.com/chaps. High quality products to shave your face, your butt, whatever you do. Let's go. That's a spicy meatball. Let's go.
Mamma mia, that's a spicy meatball.
Let the bodies hit the
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 edition of Zero Block 30. I am Uncle Chaps. We are presented by Barstool Sports. I am joined by my co-host, Captain Cons. Our sound man, Young Britton, is also here. How are you doing, gentlemen?
I am excellent, as usual, Chaps.
Doing very well.
I am a big fan of your new brand. The Spicy Meatball brand is here to stay, I think.
Yeah, I wrote that blog. I wrote a blog this week about a young woman who was, or not, I guess she's middle-aged. 40 middle-aged? Fuck. No, it's not, because I'm there in like 5 years. It's not
yeah, you are.
I'm not there. It's not middle-aged. It's a young woman. She decided to get married to herself, and I wrote a little blog mocking that. And the only reason why I wrote the blog, I didn't find the topic to be remotely interesting, but all week, I don't know why the mask version of that's a spicy meatball's been in my head, but I've been looking for an Italian subject to write a blog about, and that was it, just so I could put that's a spicy meatball in the title line.
Well, good for you. It seems to fit well, and you say it with such pizzazz that I don't think anyone can resist watching it any less than 10 times.
Yeah, I don't think it's going anywhere. I think it's going to be a thing for a while. I feel pretty fucking good about it, let's be honest with each other.
Yeah, let's also be honest. I wouldn't expect that it'll be much longer until we see it on a t-shirt.
Yeah, I was actually just thinking that I need to get it on a t-shirt.
Speaking of t-shirts, where did Francis get that t-shirt that he was wearing at the Jags game where Uncle Chaps sent me?
Yeah, so that's kind of where Uncle Chaps really got kicked off as being like an internet thing was in Jaguars Twitter,
right,
like with
right.
all my Jaguars friends. So there is a group called the Bold City Brigade that I was a part of where we just basically kind of like the Jaguars version of Bill's Mafia, where
yep.
we would hang out. We would talk about the Jags all day long on Twitter, and just I knew everything that was going on about them because of these people. Well, I hadn't met most of them in real life, just knew them on Twitter, and I was going home for the first home game. I think it was 2012 or 2013 whenever they were playing the Chiefs. And so they billed it as like a homecoming thing that Chaps was coming home.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of my running jokes that I have now, like my Venmo's being open, spicy meatball, I'm sure will
That's
be one.
Spicy meatball.
It was Uncle Chaps sent you. I would say go anywhere you could get a discount. Just tell them that Uncle Chaps sent you. So like if people were in Walmart, they would go up to the cashier and be like, hey, trying to get this gallon of milk. Uncle Chaps sent me. And like, expect a discount. And oftentimes you would get one. Like if it was
sure.
like a little mom and pop store. There are certain places you could get one. So they put this on a shirt, and about 2,000 or 3,000 people in the stadium were wearing that shirt that day for my first time coming home since I had gotten out of the Marine Corps. It was a pretty cool moment. They had a few left over, so they gave one to Francis.
Yeah, and it was in the same fashion of the old Uncle Sam posters. I would
yep.
really like it if we could bring that shirt back for the masses. I would wear that shirt proudly. So, Welker, if you're listening, let's get that shirt made.
Yeah, let's get it going, Chip. Let's get it going. Busy week, man. It's been a busy week.
Yeah.
It's almost like we get told all the time at Barstool to stick to sports. It's impossible to stick to sports now.
Right. It really is. It's just there. It used to be like, you know, some stories would intertwine, but now it's just a complete overlap. You cannot escape everything else that is not sports.
The Venn diagram of Trump touches everything in the world.
It really does. Like
anything. It touches it, and because he brings it up all the time, the NFL. I mean, I was listening to a morning show where they said that there was one morning that he had 8 tweets about it just in one morning. Like, that is unbelievable to talk about a topic that much. That doesn't – in the grand scheme, that topic doesn't matter at all. Like, it doesn't really matter.
Which topic are we talking about?
I think the kneeling.
Oh, like, the kneeling. Okay, I just want to make sure.
In the grand scheme of life, that topic means so little. It means so little.
No, I agree with you. And the problem is, though, when he tweets about it, he resurrects it. Because so many people had said, and it was true and it was honest, the silent protests and the kneeling, they were starting, if not almost all the way, out of people's minds. So, but then he tweets and he says what he said at that rally and completely resurrected it and, quite frankly, took it to a level that it hadn't been before.
Ever.
No, ever. So,
and I don't want to say that it didn't matter because the topic behind the dealing definitely matters. Like, racial equality is definitely an important issue. I'm saying that if you don't like it and you want to ignore it, you could have easily done it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you really easily could have done it.
No.
But now you can't.
No, you have to address it. You have to address it. And it's sad because I also think that by what he said, and now with the kneeling, and if you're kneeling versus are you not kneeling, do you support it, do you not support it, all it's doing is just creating a bigger divide. You know, it's great that we brought so much awareness, but now what? Now we got to get something tangible going, and some of these folks need to put their money where their mouth is and start to try to affect some change. But the problem is that it's just become a divisive issue, and it's really unfortunate because, and maybe just because we're on Twitter all the time, you see it, it just seems like more of an argument than a discussion.
Well, I think a lot of the people in the NFL, specifically the ones who are kneeling, are giving tons of money, giving tons of resources, especially the ones that are in the forefront, like Baldwin from Seattle, Colin Kaepernick, mm-hmm. still, Michael Bennett's doing a lot. Like, there's countless NFL players who are doing big time things. And I think that them having it on the national stage is a good thing. I just don't want to see their argument getting co-opted by this unity bullshit that the NFL is doing. That's not what it was about. It wasn't about unity. It's about stopping racial injustice. Like, there is a difference between I want to have equality and we're going to be unified. Unified as the NFL means fucking dickle as far as the grand scheme of the world goes.
Yeah.
But having racial equality means a shit ton. But we this week we wanted to bring on one of the centerpieces for the opposite end of the spectrum. And it's not what Alejandro Villanueva wanted to be as far as the opposite end of the spectrum. But he became a centerpiece because people take military members oftentimes and make them props in a political argument that they don't want to be in. They don't want to be part of that political process. They don't want to be part of that political argument. Villanueva went on this rant that we're going to let you listen to. Not a rant. He went on a statement in an interview where he gave his feelings of why he felt bad for being caught out in the middle of the tunnel and then standing for the national anthem. Let's go ahead and hear that now.
I would say that my personal thoughts about the situation is that regardless of this plan, very few players knew that I was going to the tunnel because I only asked the team leadership. And so because of that, I didn't give them an opportunity to stand with me during the national anthem. That is the very embarrassing part on my end and what transpires, because when everybody sees an image of me standing by myself, everybody thinks that the team and the Steelers are not behind me, and that's absolutely wrong. It's quite the opposite, is they all would have, actually the entire team would have been out there with me. Even the ones that wanted to take a knee would have been there with me had they known these extreme circumstances that at Soldier Field, you know, at the heat of the moment, when I got soldiers, wounded veterans texting me that, you know, that I have to be out there, then I think everything would have been put aside from every single one of my teammates, no doubt. So because of that, I've made Coach Tomlin look bad, and that is my fault, and that is my fault only. I've made my teammates look bad, and that is my fault only. And I made the Steelers also look bad, and that is my fault and my fault only. So unwillingly, I've made a mistake. And so, you know, I've talked to my teammates about the situation. Hopefully they understand it. If they don't, I still have to live with it because the nature of this debate is causing a lot of very heated reactions from fans, from players, and it's undeserving to all the players and coaches from this organization.
So Alejandro was very well spoken there. He gave exactly what he wanted to say when he wanted to say it, but the social media reaction based on what he said twisted his words a little bit and made him appear a certain way. We talked about it a little bit offline. Connor, what were your thoughts about Ali's speech?
I couldn't have been more proud of him and what he said and how he said it. And the social media backlash that he got was that he was forced into making a statement. He was forced into saying he was wrong. Let me be clear. Ali is an honest man, as honest as they come. His morals are sound, and everything he said was because that is what he truly felt. There was no one saying, hey, you need to make a statement and apologize for what you did, or you need to make a statement and retract what you did. No. And what you hear him say, and what is so great, is that word we've often talked about in great leaders, and it's accountability. He stood up there and he said, this is not on my teammates. This is not on my coach. This was on me. He said he was wrong. He felt what he did was wrong. And he owned 100% of that responsibility. And that is why I admire him so much.
And it wasn't that he was saying he never once apologized for standing for the national anthem or putting his hand over his heart. And to suggest that he did is fucking misleading. Like,
exactly.
That's not what he said at all. He felt bad because he made his teammates. He, in his mind, he thought he made his teammates and his coach look bad.
Right.
That is taking personal responsibility to the next level where you don't. That's what you do as a leader. He's by far one of the biggest leaders that they have in that locker room. Players across the board say that he is one of the greatest ones. And then for the other side to say that he was forced into anything blows my fucking mind. And the reason why it blows my mind is because a few months ago we had him on our podcast, and he told us exactly how he earned his Bronze Star, what his military service was like. A man that is going to give this type of statement that you're about to listen to again is not the type of guy who is going to be forced in by an NFL coach. When you carry your teammates who are injured in the battle of combat, you are not nervous when you already are financially secure with both an education and a rich NFL contract and can do anything in the fucking world that you want to. You are not going to be coerced into making any type of statement that you don't 100% believe in. Let's listen to the man. Let's listen to the legend. Alejandro Villanueva, a new hero of mine. Let's fucking go.
All right, now welcoming on to Zero Blog 30, very special guest. You might know him if you're a Steelers fan. You might know him if you watch football on Sundays and see all those nice USAA commercials. But we have West Point grad and current starting left tackle for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Alejandro Villanueva. Ali, what's up, buddy?
What's going on, Connor? How are you, chaps? Good to see you.
You too, man. You look handsome today.
Thanks, appreciate it. Appreciate the.
So you had a big. We're talking to you on Monday, just after your big playoff game and the night game in Kansas City. Are you riding high right now still?
Yeah. I mean, obviously the game was very challenging. I had my first start there last year, and I did not fare well. And so for me, to come back and really try to put a good game together against really good players was very special. And obviously, you know, I've never been so far down in the playoffs, and I really enjoy seeing my teammates every week. And obviously, like a lot of you guys know in the NFL, once you lose a game in the playoffs, then you don't see your teammates until May. And so it's really good to keep hanging out with them and spending time with them.
So a couple years ago, a lot of people might not know that you're an Army Ranger, right?
I was in Ranger Regiment, yes, sir.
Yeah, so you were, and I read that you did 3 deployments to Afghanistan. So from going from 3 deployments in Afghanistan to heading to Foxborough, I wanted to ask you if you feel kind of like I do. Now, after I'm out of the Marine Corps and I work at Barstool, I feel like I've lived basically two lives. Do you feel like that sometimes?
Yeah, and you know what? Everybody, I think when I signed with Philadelphia, you know, and the whole media frenzy with Chip Kelly and Army Ranger in the NFL, and obviously I had, you know, 0.001 chance of making it into Philadelphia. You know, the hardest thing was getting out of the military, you know, and even it's one of the things you take for granted, you know, the separation process, the not wearing your uniform again. I mean, your whole vocabulary, everything changes from, you know, going into a gate in the morning to, you know, not being able to live without chewing tobacco or Red Bulls or, you know, this is everything changes, you know, overnight. And you don't have the blanket of the government to give you a salary every month. And so I do feel like it's two lives. And this second one is very different from the first one for sure.
Did you think you took anything from your time in the Army that translated into your time now in the NFL that was helpful for you?
I mean, that's a really good question. Everybody always asks me the same thing. It's like, you know, was war like football? You know, is it like battle? And it's like, you know, I would say that the one thing, you know, just doing a quick recap, you know, of what it's like to be in the service, you know, you have a lot of challenges up ahead, you know, and so it's always you either have a course coming up or you have a deployment coming up or an assignment coming up. And they usually, like, you know, maybe they give you what, a month, 3 months in advance before you know you're deploying or before you have to go to a school or PCSA and whatnot. So there's a lot of time and you have to really, you know, when you're driving to work every day, you think, okay, my next assignment is going to be this. So I got to go to Ranger school and I got to prepare for this or that. And the NFL is very similar in that aspect. You know, you got OTAs coming up. You know, what are your goals for OTA? So how are you going to try to establish yourself as a player, or what are some of the things that you're going to do to better yourself in the team? And so that's kind of some of the same goal setting, you know, mindset that a lot of, I would say, officers and enlisted people in the military that truly, really want to get a hold of their careers, you know, face every day. And in the NFL, it's kind of your daily bread. You know, you have, you know, training camp, you know, you have to face the first team, the Redskins, and then the next week I go to Cincinnati. And so it's very similar in that aspect.
If you had to put Mike Tomlin as a position in like a normal battalion, what position and rank do you think he would have, his personality type?
Battalion sergeant major, a very animated, inspiring battalion sergeant major, and a really good one too. You know, he's very different in real life. You know, when you hear a press conference or maybe the impression that a lot of people have of him outside of football, you know, he's a very, very personable guy. He really gets the best out of you. He has standards that are his own standards. And obviously every sergeant major is different in the Army, and I'm sure in the Marine Corps as well, in terms of pet peeves and the things that they appreciate. But for him is the inner competitive edge of every player. He likes to see gory stuff on practice. He likes to see how you respond, you know, when they're doing linebackers on running backs for pass drills. I mean, those things are medieval drills.
Like Oklahoma drill?
Yeah, it's Oklahoma drill, except you have, you know, 10 yards of separation between players.
Oh, wow. So
it's pretty violent, and he just wants to see you respond. And it's more of a personal relationship that you have with him. He's a great communicator, great guy. I have a lot of admiration for him. A CAG team came to our facility last year. You know, I had the privilege to introduce them to the team. You know, they were visiting, they were doing some training in the area. Obviously, I was almost shaking when I had to introduce these guys because, you know, I know who, you know, the kind of things that they do, and all these players, obviously, on the team, you know, they had no clue who these guys were. They were just asking them questions like, have you ever worked with a Navy SEAL? You know, when he was briefing, and I think we were playing the Arizona Cardinals, I mean, when he was briefing the team and explaining the defense, the offense, I mean, it almost sounded like a mission brief, you know, like a five paragraph op order, and he was being very deliberate about the things that were key to the game, and all the all the guys from the team. But I mean, this is a sergeant major briefing a mission right now. I mean, it sounds exactly like that. He's very confident, very brief, to the point, very inspiring tone of voice. Everything is just spot on.
Yeah, I saw there was a play yesterday where one of your corners got flagged for unsportsmanlike conduct, I think, and Tomlin took like two steps out on the field and very much had the sergeant major, "What the fuck are you doing?" look on his face, and the corner immediately stopped and like went back to his spot, went back to the huddle,
yeah.
And I was like, "Hell yeah!" That's why I wanted to ask you the question, because I saw that look too.
Nice. Yeah, he's very intense, but he's a great coach, great guy, and loves the military in a very particular way that I've never seen an American appreciate the troops. I mean, he's a very genuine person. That's the best way to describe him.
So then, do you think that played into you landing a spot with the Steelers? And also, I mean, do you get treated differently by your teammates considering your background?
No, I wouldn't say I get treated differently, because a lot of people did. I mean, I would say like 99% of SEC football players in America don't know what the service academies are. And I would also say that, you know, a lot of people just don't care, you know, about, they can't conceive that. I mean, a lot of people, they didn't know that I served in the military, that I was overseas and whatnot. So that was good. And that's a good thing. I mean, I want to be treated as a football player.
Right.
That was the biggest difference between Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. The worst thing that you can do to me and for my career is to treat me as a veteran, you know, and make me a poster child of anything. That was honestly hurting my career more than anything, because you're always going to look at me as, oh yeah, but he's a veteran, you know, and making excuses for me. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, you're not starting playoff games at left tackle because you went to West Point. I mean, that's not the yeah. like you're a good football player too.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to prove the whole time. I was so like, you know, yeah, I know I've deployed three times and I'm you know, the lead dog of the dog and pony show, you know, but please allow me to see if I can play football. And Coach Tomlin, he evaluated me as a player for athletic ability. That played a major part into me being able to be here as opposed to any other team. I mean, if it wasn't for him allowing me to be a year in practice squad, I don't think I would be in the NFL.
Let's talk about your time in the practice squad. I heard that you went from 250 to 340 in a year.
So when I was in the Army, and obviously I was with Ranger Battalion, running is like the
lifeblood.
It is. It's the
That's why I never fucking run. Now I'll never do it.
It's terrible. But I mean, and I hated running. I mean, I was like, oh, maybe I can be better at other things. But the Rangers run nonstop, and so I was not. You know, it's pretty embarrassing. You know, when you're a Ranger platoon leader or you're a platoon leader period in the infantry, and you're not leading the runs, you know, and you're not like the fast gazelle type officer, and I wasn't that. I mean, I've never been, I'm 6'10", you know, I've always been above 235, 240, so it's very challenging for me to run. And so I really made an effort to get in really, really good shape and run, and I actually signed up for the Color Run Marathon in Savannah, Georgia, and I started my program, and actually it was the first day of my program running around Forsyth Park. I think it was like an 8-mile run, and I was in mile two, and I said, you know what, fuck this. I'm going to try to do something.
Yeah, running for the fucking birds, dude.
Yeah, it's tough. So, I mean, I was really skinny, you know. I was really underweight, and then when I
like a 6'10", and 240 is pretty thin.
It's pretty thin, yeah. I was really thin. I was a Pau Gasol type guy. And when I signed with Philadelphia and I was in the NFL, I was like, you know what, my technique is not great. My skills are not great. My reaction time is not great, but if I bulk up and I just become a massive human being, then maybe I can overcome some of those mistakes. And that was the mentality that I had in Philadelphia. And so I bulked up probably to 315 when I was in Philly. I mean, the food was great. the training was awesome. I was not running in the mornings. You know, I was actually getting enough sleep, drinking tons of water. I had a lot of attention, you know, which is something that you don't have in the Army for your physical development. And then when I got to Pittsburgh during that year in practice squad, I was not traveling on the weekend, so I had a lot of time to really prepare. And I mean, if you saw me right now, it's not like this looks more like a natural weight to me, you know, the 325 range. You know, when I was 235, 240, I was very skinny. I mean, I don't even recognize myself right now in other pictures.
Okay, so you're in the Rangers and you're pretty thin and coming off deployments. How is it that you made that transition and picked up football again, having not played since college?
So my last deployment with 1st Ranger Battalion, you know, it was 2014, I think it was, when I got back. And it was one of those things where, like, you know, the op tempo was kind of slowing down towards the end. And, you know, we got sent home a little early. And, you know, my platoon leader time was over as a Ranger platoon leader or platoon leader or any of the platoon. And so I looked at my career and I said, all right, so now I'm going from being in the Ranger regiment, you know, the coolest place that you could be at this age. And now I have to go to Fort Benning for Captain's Career Corps. Then I have to go into a unit for command. I went 10th Mountain Division for my platoon leader time. So the Army is probably going to switch me into a heavy mechanized unit for my command time. I'm going to have to wait, you know, 12 to 18 months to take command. And then I'm going to take command for another 12 months maybe, and pretty much going to be inventories and maybe a NTC or a JRTC rotation is the highlight of command.
Yeah, not very exciting stuff.
Yeah, and so I said, you know what, let's see what's out there. And it just so happened it was St. Patrick's Day when I got back, and Josh McNary, who's one of my teammates from West Point, was with the Indianapolis Colts, and he told me that he went to this tryout, the regional combine, and he was able to get a look to play in the NFL. And so, you know, my ultimate goal was to go to grad school and be able to pay for it. You know, since I went to West Point, I didn't have a GI Bill. I was not eligible. And the NFL seemed like a possible way of paying for grad school. Didn't really think it through. I mean, obviously the odds were very, very slim. But I said, you know what, it's in Flowery Branch, Atlanta. I'm going to drive 3 hours. I'm going to try out, see what happens. And, you know, if I also had the feeling, you know, when I was at West Point, I played three different positions. You know, I feel like my career was not a serious football career. And I feel like that was a door that I still hadn't closed. And so I just decided to explore it. You know, I was probably going to get out anyway, just based on the fact that, you know, I spent so much time deployed, and my wife and I got married, and I was looking to do other things. And so it was just literally, you know, showing up to American Idol, not knowing how to sing, and seeing if any of the judges would like me, and maybe.
Well, it seemed like it worked out pretty well for you.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, I mean, I was very fortunate to have a lot of people that helped me out along the way, and that's the you know, the main thing that a lot sometimes I forget is just how some people went out of the way to help me out, and from getting out of the Army to you know, facilitating my travel, to, you know, giving me a year of practice squad to develop. And so, you know, I was very, very lucky in my situation.
Outstanding. So we wanted to talk to you about the story of how you got a Bronze Star. I know you are a stoolie, and you hear all the time people talking about my Purple Heart, and I fucking hate it for the most part, like bringing it up.
Yeah.
But we wanted to give you a chance on this with a primarily military audience to kind of explain what happened with that story, because this is an audience that will appreciate it. If you just mention it on like a television broadcast or a normal interview with a beat writer, they might not have the appreciation for what comes along with that medal.
Yeah, it's a very tough medal. You know, over the years, you know, when they first gave it to me, it was one of those things where I was like, you know what, sure, somebody put me up for my platoon sergeant, I think it was. And, you know, it's not like a really, it's one of those things where, like, I really didn't understand the purpose of an award, especially in my specific situation, one of my soldiers died. And it's kind of like a reminder. And so the way I always looked at that award is not so much an award that I made or that I got, but more of something that my platoon did and was able to accomplish. You know, essentially in the summer of 2011, I think it was 2011, we were in Kandahar province, and we got a call from a teacher / A&P guy that he essentially just gone down to a mosque, and they were having a meeting outside of a mosque with, you know, 20, 30 Taliban, and he just went in there and just started spraying bullets, and he just got a whole bunch of Taliban killed and wounded, and it was probably a mile south of our cop, and he just, you know, rang a call, called the AMP from our cop and said, dude, I just killed a whole bunch of dudes, they're evacuating right now to the Chinese hospital in taxis, and my company commander said, okay, just, you know, one of the targets, one of the big names that we were looking for throughout that whole deployment was there, and he said, just go out there and intercept him, you know, go out there and intercept the cab drivers, we'll bring him to our aid station, but we want to have a hold of them, and obviously, you know, the potential for a a blow to the Taliban network in the area was crucial, and that was a very stressful time during our deployment. You know, there was a lot of kinetic activity and whatnot. So, you know, we rushed down to that mosque. Once we got to that mosque, we realized there wasn't anybody there. I mean, we did a very thorough approach, bounding overwatch all the way to the intersection where the mosque was located. We called the local national. You know, we're all taking cover, you know, sort of waiting for something. I mean, we're expecting to see a massacre, a carnage, and we didn't see anything. And so, you know, we called the local national, and unfortunately, somebody came from around the corner. Obviously, it was a pretty built-up urban area, and sprayed on an alleyway where my section was located. And immediately, three soldiers went down. One of them was shot in the kneecap. The other one was shot behind the leg. And unfortunately, one of them was shot through underneath his armpit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we started, you know, doing the procedures, just pull into a compound, just get everybody inside and try to gain control of the situation. Obviously, return fire, calling for air support, CCA, see if we can get some birds in the sky. And, you know, when we were all inside the compound, you know, doing a quick recount, I figured out that there was a soldier that was still missing, and they were still on the outside. And so at that point, you know, it was such a tough feeling as a platoon leader, because you say, man, I led this patrol down here. I got all my men, you know, obviously we're following orders and we're trying to do this mission. But, you know, this unfortunate event has got one of my guys out there by himself. And so I grabbed one of my privates, and we essentially went up, you know, to grab him and rescue him and drag him back to safety. When I first saw the soldier, you know, he couldn't breathe. He was scared. I thought he got shot in the foot. I saw no blood. You know, it was one of those kind of, you know, shooting with one arm, grabbing the soldier with the other, and then trying to drag him back in this alleyway all the way back to the compound. And then once we got him inside, then we realized that the wounds was pretty serious, and that he was fighting for his life. And you know, we called a medevac bird, and we were able to do a quick exfil, you know, carrying soldiers however we could. Obviously, you know, we didn't have that many people, and with three casualties, you know, carrying all the soldiers was pretty challenging. So, you know, looking back at the whole war thing, it was a pretty awful night in my life. Yep. It was not a pleasant story. It was not a thing that is fond of. I look back at the, you know, at my actions all the time, and I never find gratitude in seeing, you know, how I was rewarded with a Bronze Star of Valor. You know, I mean, any soldier, any platoon leader, anybody would have done the same thing. You know, if you have somebody left out, you know, with bullets raining on them. And so I just did what everybody else in my platoon would have done. You know, I don't think there was a single person in my platoon that would have not done that for me. And so to give me an award is kind of weird. And then honestly, I got into the whole, you know, once I got more experience about the way it works to write yourself up for awards, the way it works when how awards get processed by the military, then I found out that there's a lot more to it. It's kind of like it's kind of like the Pro Bowl in the NFL. Yeah. You know, it's very subjective. It's kind of like NCOERs. Like the better they're written, the more chances they get. You know, to approve. A lot of times, commanders at higher levels do it for morale. So if this company is gonna beat up, you know, then you give a couple awards out there just so they can, you know, rally and say, you know what, we're a courageous unit and whatnot. So
and it's almost kind of backwards, where like people of higher ranks get higher awards whenever the writing of the intent of the war is doing something outside your rank and responsibility. But you'll have, like in the Marines, for example, if a PFC does something that's great and wonderful in combat, he'll get like a Navy Achievement Medal with Valor. Where if a major did that same thing, he's getting like, he's getting like a silver star. Yeah. It's just not right.
Yeah, the awards are, I mean, I wouldn't say they're a joke, because there's a lot of great actions done by great service members. But overall, it's a very sketchy process. And, you know, if I could give my award back and just say, man, you know what, let's break it up into pieces and just say that the platoon was very courageous, then I would have done that in a heartbeat. You know, to single me out, you know, out of my platoon was something that, you know, I don't feel that was right. And you know, I always look at the guys that I served with. It was such a privilege and such an honor. I can never look at them in the face and say, you know, I was courageous that night, you know, because they all say, you know, we're all in the same situation. You know, for another mission, same thing that could have happened. Another guy could have gotten written for the same award, you know. It all depends on how you write it, you know, because at the end of the day, the guy that was approving the award was not there, doesn't have, you know, has no visual of what was happening. And so the way, you know, I met some great platoon leaders that were great platoon leaders because they wrote awesome NCOERs and awesome awards. And, you know, other E7s, you know, made lists and they were able to climb through the ranks because they had great, great writing. And so, you know, I think in my case, it was just one of those things that, you know, I realized that they gave it to me, but at the same time, I understand that, you know, my whole entire platoon was in the shit, you know, for lack of a better word.
Combat awards always work like that. If you get something that's worth mentioning, you usually don't want to mention the events that happened behind it that you got it. So we really appreciate you taking the time and telling your story and let people know. And I'm sure looking back, your troops are like crazy proud of you for what you're doing now. I know just like Connor being a West Point guy, me being a military dude, I know you don't want to be known as that guy, because I don't want to be known as just the military guy at Barstool either. Like, you want to be hang your hat on your own merits of where you're at now. But we're really proud of you, and we're thankful for your service, and we're glad that you're in the opportunity to do what you're doing with Pittsburgh, man. It's awesome.
Well, thank you so much.
Because, I mean, certainly, like, as I alluded to earlier, you're on the USAA commercial, and then obviously, you know, you introduce yourself each game. It's United States Military Academy. What's that like, kind of, you know, again, you want to be awarded for your merits on the field, but what's it like always kind of being, like, you're the Army guy. What is that like? Like, we're always mentioning you.
Yeah, you know what? I was watching a documentary called One in a Billion about this this Indian basketball player that's 7'11", and he's got the whole country of India behind him, and they're all cheering for him, and they want him to get drafted. And sometimes I think it's like that as well, you know. Sometimes I feel like I have the responsibility of representing the Army every single time I open my mouth in a press conference. You know, the whole Colin Kaepernick situation, you know, you have ESPN asking you, you know, what do you think about Colin Kaepernick, and you're not really responding for yourself.
And they basically want you to take a shit on him whenever they're asking. That's like,
exactly. It's very unfair. You know, like, you really can't say, you know, I just don't care that much about this. You know, your answer has to represent the values of all the people that you represent. And you have to speak for the guys that don't have a voice because they're not, you know, on the USA, you know, commercial playing every 5 minutes, you know, every single time there's a game. So, it's a little bit of pressure in that aspect, but I embraced the opportunity to somewhat in a way represent the product of the Military Academy, which is such an honorable institution that has created, you know, great leaders and has done so many great things for the military, and at the same time for all the servicemen and women that are out there serving. And then you know, if they look at me and they say, well, that's what a service, you know, member looks like, then I'm assuming that everybody else in the military is like that. And so you know, I always have to take care of what I say and the way I conduct myself, you know, and especially off the field. And you know, it's a duty that I embrace.
Yeah, no, because I can assure you, you know, the Army Football Brotherhood is extremely proud of you, and I think you represent the Ranger Regiment very well. And I'm sure everyone that you served with, like Chap said, is very proud of you as well. So I mean, you're killing it, man. You're doing a good job, and we really want you to continue to have success and maybe even bring home a Super Bowl ring, bring back a Super Bowl ring to West Point.
Yeah, I normally don't root for officers, but I'll be cheering for you on Sunday, man.
Thanks, appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, honestly, one of the most awkward parts is that I always get a thing for my service, you know, because everybody knows that I served, and that's sometimes it gets a little bit embarrassing, you know. You'd say, like, I served 1st Ranger Battalion, you know, well, sometimes I do interviews, you know, with CBS or whatever, and they're like, oh, my God, 3 deployments, you know, how did you do that? Is that even normal? And I'm just like, I mean, dude, there's guys in 1st Ranger Battalion that have deployed like 19 times.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
know, that have not seen their families in ages. You know, guys from the 82nd that have gotten 5-year-long deployments. Guys in 3rd ID that were in Iraq for 18 months. I mean, I'm nothing. You know, I just did, you know, 5 years. And you can't compare it to the service that some of the guys are doing out there. You know, obviously, if you go into special operations, then, you know, my resume is pretty embarrassing. And so every single time I get a thing for my service, it just gets a little bit, you know, like, ugh, I don't know if I should say, like, thank you, or are you making fun of me? Or
No, man, you did great, dude. Well, thank you very much for coming on. We appreciate it, and good luck this weekend.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
That's a spicy meatball.
So we had Ollie on then. And you could hear the type of man that he is in his mm-hmm. voice. You heard that same type of humility that Connor spoke about before you heard the interview. You heard it there. Even with the Bronze Star, even with the accolades in combat, he never once made it about himself.
Nope.
So when he gives an interview like that, you can see how that type of leadership translates to the NFL field. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. And I think just as a society, we are so jaded, and that's why everyone was so quick to vilify him making the statements that he did, because they were just looking for a reason to cut him down. And it was just very disheartening to see that reaction. And that's why I wanted people, and I tweeted it, and thankfully, you know, we had the interview that we're going to replay, that we just replayed this week. That's why I wanted people to listen, to understand the type of person he is, like you said. And for all the reasons you said too, Chaps, like, he has no reason to kowtow to anybody. He is just sound in his convictions that you could tell he was speaking from the heart at that podium.
Could you imagine the outrage that would happen if he got cut?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God, dude. It would be unbelievable.
He's not some, you know, he's not some 53 man on the roster, you know, teetering between the practice squad.
He's a top 20 left tackle in the NFL.
Right.
Easily.
Right. Evident by the fact that he just got a very nice new contract and the Steelers want to keep him around for another 4 years minimum. And you just listen to his teammates and how they speak about him. I don't know many guys in the NFL who are universally respected the way he is, which is not, and you know what? So many times people want to just give blanket respect to veterans, and believe me, obviously, I'm very grateful for the respect that we receive, but it is evident that he's gone in that locker room, and although he walked in with a certain air of respect from his teammates, it's evident that he then earned further respect by the way he works on the football field, by the way he conducts himself in the locker room. So although, yes, he is a veteran, he's respected as a football player too. And more importantly, importantly, as a person.
Yeah, and we talked about that with Cardona. Like, it's exactly. All great and good that you went to one of the academies, but nobody gives a fuck when the days are, if you're not a good football player,
exactly.
You're done. Like, you're out.
Yep.
So it doesn't matter. I mean, the whole conversation is just exhausting. Like, everybody tries to make it fit into it. There is nuance everywhere in life, mm-hmm. especially in this. It's exhausting, man. It's so exhausting that I want to take a nap on an Elisa mattress. Elisa mattress is giving us so much of a discount right now. It's $100 off for all the stoolies. You go to elisamattress.com/Barstool. You're going to get $100 off. You get a 100-night risk-free trial. Shout out to America. These are 100% American-made. It's 3 high-quality foam layers, a 10,000 five-star customer reviews. That's you can trust. I don't buy anything that's less than a 4.5 review. There's 10,000 five-star reviews for these things, man. Get you a mattress. They start at less than $1,000 or start at just $525. Mm-hmm. Holy shit. $100 off Elisa mattress just for you stoolies. Another side of the coin on this military argument is that we saw, and not even a military argument, about the kneeling. When people try to make points that it's about the military, the flag mm-hmm. is about the military, the national anthem is about the military, I think Bob Costas made good point this week.
You read my mind. You read my mind. Continue.
Bob Costas basically said that you don't have to be a military member in order to be a patriot.
Right.
Martin Luther King Jr. was a patriot. Rosa Parks was a patriot. Teachers are patriots. Firefighters are patriots. The list goes on and on and on. But whenever... right now, because we're at such a long war, military is right at the forefront of that. There is a meme going around of a staff sergeant Marine who had lost both of his legs and said that he would do anything to be able to stand up again. Nobody talked to this Marine before they used his picture. And basically what is propaganda,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's propaganda,
it is.
Saying that he is going to use it. He said that he is not against people kneeling. Like, when he actually did get interviewed, he said that people aren't – I'm not against kneeling. That's what I fought for.
Right.
And I think of all the veterans that I know – and maybe I'm just jaded because you surround yourself with like-minded people for the most part. Most of the people that I served with have no problem with the kneeling.
No.
None.
I don't, because as we've said multiple times, and you said eloquently in tweets and in your blog, that that's what we fought for. We fought for that freedom so that you can kneel. And Costas definitely said it right. The fact that the flag is now conflated with respecting military people and veterans, that's only one small piece of the pie. So I don't see it as, if you're kneeling, you're disrespecting my service. Not at all. It's like you said, there's all these other individuals that this flag represents, the immigrants that came to this country and made it great and built that foundation. So to say that you're just blanketly disrespecting veterans is a little short-sighted, I think, and it's not really... this is tough to say. It's just, it's like you said, I think it's political propaganda. I think it's people, ultra conservative people wanting to prop up their agenda and using the military as that prop.
It's not just conservatives that do it. Liberals do it as well. Like liberals will do it whenever it doesn't fit their, this definitely is a both sides of the coin. If liberals want to make a point about health care or something like that, they will bring up veterans, like veterans don't get enough VA coverage, blah, blah, blah.
That's
like,
true.
So you throw it in people's faces all the time. Like, stop it. Like, that's not what it's there for. It's not to make your political point. Military members, especially those that are injured, are not your political fucking pawns. I want to move on from a topic. We've had enough serious conversation.
Yep.
I want to talk a little bit about an insult that somebody put on my Twitter feed this week. That makes me so happy. And I know this is going to be a very niche insult. If you call somebody a boot, it makes me so happy. Like, I saw it this week where somebody disagreed with what I was saying about the entire kneeling situation. And basically they were saying that nobody who has served would say this type of thing. And it was what I had said. Mm-hmm. And I basically did a Twitter dunk on somebody. And... one of the Marines that followed me was like, yeah, you fucking boot, to the person that says it to me. And I lost my shit, man. It's just such a perfect insult. And then I texted you and I was like, do you guys use this phrase too?
I didn't hear
right?
it. No, I never heard it until I met you. And I still don't really fully understand it, if I'm being honest. So
like, a boot is what's referred to as somebody who's brand new. Like, boot camp is the beginning of your service.
All right, that makes sense.
So you call somebody a boot as far as they're, like, just out of boot camp.
Right.
But with your friends, with your coworkers, with whatever, it's an insult that sticks around forever. So say I just got promoted to gunnery sergeant. I have a gunnery sergeant friend who's been a gunnery sergeant for a year. He's going to come up to me like, congratulations, but you're still a fucking boot.
Right.
Like, you're a boot gunny. You're a boot captain. You're a boot major. It's just one of those perfect insults that will always make me laugh. Mm-hmm. Another one comes from the rifle range. Did you guys have a phrase that you would say if somebody dropped a rifle?
Wow, you put me on the spot. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. What, say what yours is, and it might jog my memory.
All right, so if we're at the rifle range, you have your entire platoon or your battalion there, and if you drop it and it hits the ground and you can hear it without fail, and it comes from recruit training too, Marines will say, fucking follow it.
So we would say drop with it.
Okay, yeah.
Drop
principle.
With it.
Follow it means like get down and get push-ups
too. Yep.
So you
drop with it.
So one of my favorite memories from college was I was in this class. We were in a huge auditorium that could fit like 500-600 people. One of those like science or math classes that, you know, everybody's in. It's one of the 101 classes for freshmen.
Right.
Somebody gets up. They drop their laptop. And it's like onto a concrete floor, and you could hear it like clang throughout the entire thing in the middle of the instructor giving a lecture. Instinctually, me from the back of the class, I go, fucking follow it. Nobody knows what it means.
Yeah, everyone's looking at you now like, who's this weirdo?
I'm just out of the Marine Corps, dude. Like, I'm talking 3 weeks retired.
Right.
I'm laughing so fucking hard at my own joke that I had to leave the classroom. It probably would have been better if I was sitting in the back and I just went, and now that's the spicy meatball from the back. This was so damn perfect, man. But nobody gets it. It sucks when you have a great military joke and civilians don't understand it.
There's lots of them out there, too. And I've tried to incorporate just military lingo and things of that nature into my daily vernacular with my friends just so they can appreciate a little bit. But you're right, there are just some things that just won't ever escape you, and boot and drop with it seem to be two of the things that will just always evoke a very good memory for you.
I say it to my kids, dude. If my kids, like McCartney last week, dropped a bowl of cereal on the ground, fucking follow it. I'm not about to start doing push-ups, but I gotta say it. Like, yeah. It's part of my life. You know, whenever you have to sneeze and somebody interrupts you,
mm-hmm.
That's what that comment is. If somebody drops it and it doesn't and I don't say follow it, I feel like I just swallowed a sneeze.
Yeah. No, I get it. Believe me, I get it. And I think that's something that maybe we need to implement within the ZBT platoon. I charge our listeners to bring that back and make it more prevalent in society. If you start dropping things, like you drop your phone, hey, better drop with it.
Well, another thing that we used to do that was really, really fun, that this is actually something that they can do if you're a listener. If you're both listeners and somebody is holding anything in their hand at any given time, it doesn't matter what it is, you say, let me get that, you have to give it to them. So I'll tell you a story why this is so good. So my buddy Chris Diaz, who was killed in Afghanistan, we were neighbors for a long time. We played the let me get that game no matter what. We would go to the gym. We would do everything together. He would go and make a protein shake. Right when it was done getting made, I'd be like, hey, Chris, let me get that.
Let me get that.
So he would have to give it to me. And you can't do let me get that back right away to somebody else. Like, if you just said it, then you do it. So we would be like the last person to eat lunch. Like, you're trying to hide from that person so they don't see you eating lunch. Because if you're about to take a bite of your Big Mac, let me get that, dude. And you're like, fuck, now I got to go back and get something else for lunch. One time, we lived out in town together in the same apartment complex. Rent was like $2,800 a month. So, and you could only pay in yen, like cash yen.
Okay.
So you had to go to the bank, pull out American dollars, transfer it into yen, then go pay your rent for the month. So Chris has like $2,800 worth of yen in his hand. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hey, dude, let me get that. He gives it to me because he abides by the rules, man. He goes home, calls me like 2 hours later. I hear his wife fucking screaming.
Oh, damn.
And she doesn't know that
she
he called
doesn't
me.
Get it.
I guess he like called me and like, well, she was a service member too.
Oh,
so
okay.
And she was in the kennel. So okay. She knew the rule. So he just calls, puts the phone down by him, doesn't say anything, but I know exactly, like, why in the fuck would you do that? Why would you kill him? I'm there out of that fucking game. He gets you on fast food. Be better at the game. Like, because she knows the game, too, that he can't come ask for it back. So I call him over. I'm like, hey, dude, let's play a video game. You win. You get your money back, blah, blah, blah. I ended up giving his money back. But the devotion to the game is so pure and perfect to let me get that game.
Let's bring that back. Let's bring let me get that.
If you're at the bar, dude, that's the perfect game. Because you go out and get a fresh beer.
Yeah.
You come back. Let me get that.
Let me get that, like, dude. I just finished my beer. Let me get that. You know what? I got to go back to the bar, I guess. Here's my beer. Great game. Let's implement that. Man. Absolutely.
Fun game. You got it. Got any save rounds? We both have save rounds, I think.
Yeah, I got one just because, you know, folks have asked. The other thing that was in the news recently was the picture of the West Point cadet. And it's important to point out that the picture was from graduation 2016. So nearly months ago now, or a year and months. And it was a picture of a cadet holding his dress hat and the sign inside the hat said communism will win. And then there was a lot of uproar about that picture. And then he tweeted out and doubled down. And he said, if there's any doubt, and it was a picture of him opening his dress uniform, and it was a picture of Che Guevara. And people have asked my thoughts on that. And my thoughts are this, and it's pretty black and white. When you are in military uniform, you are not allowed under UCMJ to make any sort of political statement. You can believe whatever you want to believe, but when you are in military uniform, you cannot make any sort of political statement. So, that said...
Especially as an officer.
And it's...
As an officer, you're not even allowed to talk about your political opinions
correct,
to your troops.
Correct.
And then the guys can. That's a big difference.
We take it one step further, though. It's not like he's saying, hey, I'm a Republican, hey, I'm a Democrat within our great democracy. He's saying, propping up a belief system that is widely outside of what we believe here in the United States of America. So the United States Military Academy released a statement that the unit that he is currently in is conducting an investigation. So quite honestly, I hope he gets punished in some way, shape, or form, because He violated.
Oh, he definitely will. I mean, you know, he definitely.
Yeah, he definitely will. And I just think that was
wrong. He'll probably get a non-promote letter or probably get a non-continuation of contract. Like.
Yep. And what people need to understand, too, he took those pictures on graduation day. So that was dumb of him, probably thinking like, well, I can't get in trouble now at West Point, not thinking far enough into the future that, oh, those pictures could resurface at some time, evident by the fact that he posted them himself like an idiot, not thinking he can get in trouble because it was prior to his current unit. So
he just started, man.
Yeah.
Like,
kid's
the real
an idiot.
Shit just started.
Yeah.
Yeah, straight
kid's
up.
An idiot.
I mean, no matter what your political beliefs are, if you believe in socialism and communism, like, you have that right, too, like Khan said, but you can't do that in uniform.
No.
He knows he can. He knows exactly what he's doing. Like,
especially
with his Twitter account and
exactly.
shit being open with it. He knows exactly.
What it is. Absolutely, he is. And especially when you raise your right hand and you swear to defend the Constitution. And last time I checked, our Constitution talks all about democracy. So, quite contradictory here. We're in a little bit of a pickle.
And it's not like he didn't know. I understand. I would understand it more if it was a kid who just went out of high school, went to West
Right.
Point. This is a dude who's prior enlisted. You could tell by the medals that he's wearing on his chest that he had already been to Afghanistan. He had done some combat tours, then applied to go to West Point. It wasn't like they forced you to go. Like he actively wanted to go there. So it's just a very strange.
Very strange.
Thing.
It's very,
usually
very strange.
If you have those far ideologies, West Point is not a place that you would want to go.
Much less the military.
Yeah. On the very opposite end of that, the first female Marine did end up graduating. She was the first infantry officer in the history of the Marine Corps.
Shout
out
to her.
There is going to be a point in the future where at boot camp, we've talked a lot about boot camp this episode, in order to have the immense amount of knowledge and history that the Marines have, in boot camp, you scream historical facts throughout the entire time that you're there. So they'll be like, who's the first female Marine? Every Marine knows that it's Opha Mae Johnson because you screamed it 730,000 times while you're at boot camp.
Right.
And who's a Marine with 5 Navy crosses? Chesty Pooler. Like, you just go on and on and on with these facts. Eventually, it'll be who's the first female Marine officer. Her name will be screamed. So kudos to her. Congratulations, ma'am.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it is. We are going to... Oh, I wanted to ask you. I don't think we talked about it, but we are having a guest next week who was an Army or Marine captain, I believe, in Vietnam. He actually knows the people, served with the people who wrote the book Matterhorn. There's a much to do about the Peter Burns short documentary series that's on PBS about Vietnam.
Right.
And it's kind of, I talked initially to the gentleman and he told me that some of his feelings were what some of the guys who watched Band of Brothers who were in World War II are feeling, that they weren't sure if it was the right time and that they would have wished that he would have saved off on that until they were dead, because it brought up so many bad memories. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have him on to talk about some of the feelings that he has while watching that show. So we'll have to get caught up. If you want to listen and follow along to that, watch the documentary so we can talk about it next week. It's On the Retreat.